ever-changing world, Off Hollywood Media presents A Voice of Truth and Inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. Good evening to all of you. I am excited about today's guest. Actually, Daniel Pinchbeck is our guest, who's an author, a journalist, and a filmmaker, and a protagonist of a new film being released this week called 2012, Time for Change. I'm also excited because I'm going to get to meet him on Wednesday, because Life Changes is hosting its very first screening of a film, and that film is going to be 2012, Time for Change, and Daniel Pinchbeck will be there at the screening. The screening will be at the Lamley Theaters on Sunset 5 in Hollywood at Sunset and Laurel Canyon, Crescent Heights. For those of you who want more information, we have that up at Life Changes. We've made an invite, Evite invitation, whatever those things are called on Facebook. I'm learning all that stuff myself. But it's there. And also on our website and all over the place. So by all means, and if you can't find it, do write us. Go to lifechanges.ws and tell us what you need, and we'll get you the information for it. Whether that's for our Wednesday event or our Friday event, we're going to be at the Conscious Life Expo, which is purportedly the largest expo of its kind, I believe, in the nation. Actually, it's held once a year normally, but this will be the first time it'll be held in October. And that's going to be at the LAX Hilton starting Friday night. And Friday night, Life Changes Live is one of the premier events. And we are going to have two great guests there as well. Alan Howarth, who brought you the music of Star Trek and Halloween and all of those great movies, Poltergeist, and is now working with a different kind of music called raw. And so he's going to be sharing with us what raw music is and how it affects our lives and our bodies. And we have a musical guest, Raspin Stewart, who is actually featured in all of the Starbucks across the country. So you've probably already heard his music. You'll be hearing him live at the LAX Hilton if you come to Life Changes Live. So that's exciting, and we're excited about that. So we're looking forward to see however many of you want to come and meet us. I, of course, will be there, as will our producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, who will be speaking as well, and Mark Lejeune, who will be speaking as well. As a matter of fact, he might be singing. I might be singing. I might even be singing with Raspin Stewart, who will be singing for sure. So we're going to have a great time no matter what. Lots of great information, music, and fun. So as for what I wanted to share today, this is an interesting thing. I received an email from a dear, dear friend, and the email started like this. The president of Argentina received this and called it junk mail, and 8 days later, his son died. Warning, do not break this. Wow. I can't tell you what it's like. I actually think it was the first email of the morning, and sometimes I wake up really early in the morning, and if it's 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock, my work ethic at the moment knows no bounds. I could be considered a workaholic. I'm so working hard on getting Life Changes up and running for all the good of all of us involved that I'm sure Daniel, who's going to be our guest tonight, knows this kind of behavior. But what a way to start a morning. What a way to open an email. What a way to get something from a friend. It's almost like, you know, she tricked me into it. Here's this scary message wrapped up in a beautiful email from a friend. I see a friend's name. It's like, oh, look who wrote me, so-and-so. Well, obviously, she was scared into sending emails. you have to send out 20 emails or something, and she was scared into doing that. I'm not sure why we're doing this to each other. Why are we doing this to ourselves? Why are we passing this stuff on? Okay, so you're superstitious. I understand. We all have our thing. So, you want to make sure that you don't break the email and so that terrible things don't happen to you, which won't, unless you believe them, which is how superstition works. So, send the email. You know, the irony of it is, it was an angel that she sent. An angel. With this whole scary message about someone whose son died. Well, she's got children, so I could understand, but send the email if you want, but take out all the scary stuff. Take out the stuff that's threatening. Just send it to 20 people. Just send the angel. And there, you didn't break the email or the whatever it's called, the chain letter or the chain email. You didn't break it. All you did was just send the 20 emails just like the email said to do. It didn't say don't erase the scary part. Delete the scary part and just send the beautiful angel. And then let's start to see what happens. Maybe people will not be freaking out and not be wondering if they break this, if they're going to be breaking superstition and all that stuff. Because superstition, really, it works with what you believe. But you obviously believe it. I'm talking to my friends, so just send the beautiful angel. And maybe we can stop scaring each other to death, scaring each other to horrible lives. And maybe we can start treating each other better that way, because that is not only, it's violent is what it is. It's violent. We are, and violating, we are violating the right to send things to our friends and our friendship, and we are being violent towards them by sending them something. The president of Argentina received this and called it junk mail, and 8 days later, his son died. Warning, do not break this. Filippo, do not break this, from a dear friend. Let's stop. If we can stop our superstition, much better. But if we can't stop our superstition, let's not impose it on our dear friends because of your fears. And if you feel you need to send the email, remove the threats. You didn't like them when you got them. And send the angel or whatever it is. There. That's all I have to say. I feel better now. Okay. So with that, I'm ready to introduce our guest who, again, is Daniel Pinchbeck. He's an author, a journalist, a filmmaker, and a protagonist of this new film, just released this week, actually, called 2012, Time for Change. And remember, again, we will be screening this film as Life Changes on Wednesday at the Lamley Sunset 5. And again, you can go to our website at www.lifechanges.ws or find us on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo to learn all about it. Author Daniel Pinchbeck has deep personal roots in the New York counterculture of the 1950s and 1960s. Very interesting. His father was an abstract painter, and his mother, Joyce Johnson, was a member of the Beat Generation and dated Jack Kerouac as On the Road hit the bestseller list in 1957, as chronicled in Johnson's best-selling book, Minor Characters, A Beat Memoir. Pinchbeck was a founder of the 1990s literary magazine Open City with fellow writers Thomas Beller and Robert Bingham. He has written for many publications, including Esquire, the New York Times Magazine, The Village Voice, and Rolling Stone. In 1994, he was chosen by the New York Times Magazine as one of the 30 under 30 destined to change our culture. And that's what he's working on doing. His books include 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, and Breaking Open the Mind, a psychedelic journey into the heart of contemporary shamanism. Pinchbeck appears in the new feature film documentary 2012, Time for Change, directed by João Amorim. With that, welcome Daniel Pinchbeck to the show.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, Daniel. And I look forward to meeting you on Wednesday.
You're not going to meet me on Wednesday.
Oh, you're not coming. You're headed to New York, I bet, for the opening there.
Exactly.
Ah, very good. And I should probably mention, or I'll let you mention, some of the luminaries that are in the film that are going to be joining you in New York.
The luminaries in the film, there's a whole bunch. There's some of them are going to be in New York, but not exactly sure which ones. But the film has Sting in it, talking about his ayahuasca experiences, David Lynch talking about his transcendental meditation work, Ellen Page, the actress, talking about her permaculture design work, Gilberto Gil, the Brazilian musician and minister of foreign affairs, talking about yoga and nutrition, and then a lot of design scientists. Paul Stamets, the mycologist, and John Todd, and Barbara Marks Hubbard, and economists, and indigenous activists, and spiritual leaders. So it's quite a range.
Quite a range indeed, actually. The film covers quite a lot of different aspects. It starts off a little bit scary, actually, for some of us who might not know some of the things that are going on. And probably in your world, and maybe even mine, we might think, oh, people are living in a box if they don't know some of what's going on. But it kind of gives an idea of, okay, this is what's going on. And then it goes into what we could do about it, right?
Exactly. Well, actually, it's kind of three phases. It's what's happening on a planetary level. Then it's the individual's kind of journey towards attaining a kind of different state of awareness, a kind of more deeper level of coherence, using, you know, ancient tools such as, you know, meditation or shamanism or yoga. And then from there, it goes into a solution-oriented methodology, looking at contemporary problems and how we could approach them.
You know, some of the solutions actually look fun. Like, I started getting excited. It's interesting that when people think that we're going to have to change, sometimes they think negative. We're going to have to do without this, and we're going to have to do without that. And some of what the film talks about is we're going to have more of this, and we're going to have more of that, right?
Yeah, exactly. We could have more community and less, you know, mindless consumerism.
Right. Now, you seem like you are so steeped in this. One could almost say you were born to do this based on the culture that you were born into and what your parents were doing at the time. Did you know from early on what this was all about, or is this kind of new for you? You just kind of went with the flow at the time. When did this consciousness actually sink into you?
It's actually all, you know, kind of a new development in a way. I mean, I guess my first book, Breaking Open the Head, came out in 2002, and that described this kind of existential crisis I had in my late 20s, early 30s, that led me back to exploring the psychedelic substances that were known in the 60s, but have been very much like suppressed since then. And I ended up going to West Africa, going to tribal initiation in Gabon, going down to the Amazon in Ecuador, working with a tribal group, taking ayahuasca, visiting the Mazatec Indians in Mexico. And I actually was kind of in a scientific, rationalist mindset. I didn't really believe in any spiritual anything. And it was only through having these direct experiences that I kind of changed my perspective.
And now you are working on changing a perspective of the whole planet. What is your mission that, as you just would describe it?
Ultimately, I would say that, like, the world as it is just doesn't sit well with me. I think there's a huge amount of unnecessary suffering, unnecessary ignorance. I think it's, you know, really unfortunate that we're, like, you know, decimating the diverse biodiversity on the planet, and it's very short-sighted what we're doing to the earth and to the wilderness and even to other human beings. And it's really not necessary because we have all of these tools available to shift people's consciousness and then also to shift patterns of behavior on a social level, even on a global level. So for me, I mean, along with the film, which is really puts forth a lot of these ideas, I also have a company, Evolver. We have a website, evolver.net, which we run something called the Evolver Social Movement. And we now have 45 groups around the world, in the U.S. and abroad, meeting every month in events that are we call Evolver Spores, where we create different themes and we try to get local communities to know about each other and then to work together, to collaborate.
That's excellent. I've actually met a couple of your people here in Los Angeles, and we've talked about doing something together, and I'm sure we will. We just haven't gotten to that yet. But that's exciting, and I know that that's growing. I see the emails and the postings, and it feels like out there somewhere, since we haven't physically connected, there's somebody doing something. And that's what the film also brings across, is it's not just us here in America. Throughout the world, people are becoming more and more aware of the changes or the need to change. What are some of the main changes that you see either needing to happen or happening?
Well, I mean, there's some, you know, the film's only 85 minutes, and while I think, 2012 Time for Change, by the way, and I hope people will go see it this week while it's at the movie theater, but, I think the movie offers some, you know, areas. I mean, for instance, I think it's extraordinary that we don't have a peace movement in this country right now. We're in these really long, intractable wars, and I know there's a small peace movement, but there isn't the type of, you know, kind of civil society protests that could actually bring pressure on the government to stop, you know, these endless military campaigns. You know, we don't really go into that in the movie, but in the movie we talk about another major piece, which is the economic system. We talked to Bernard Lyotard, author of the Future of Money, and he argues that the economic system that we've now defined only supports kind of competitive and destructive and unsustainable behavior, that it has to be fundamentally reinvented. And then he gives some examples of how that could take place. And then another element is permaculture. I mean, most of the people are now getting fed by these monoculture, you know, industrial agriculture, which requires a lot of fossil fuel inputs and kind of reduces soil vitality. And permaculture is a method where, you know, people work much more in closely in responding to the land and what the land is capable of generating. And actually, although it's more labor-intensive in a way, it creates much greater yields than the industrial agriculture system that we currently have.
Excellent and exciting. And speaking of exciting, you mentioned that you hope people go see the film. Agreed. And that this just in from your press agent, Stacey Hess, who thankfully booked us booked you for our show, who's a friend of Life Changes as well and who we want to send a shout out to. Hey, Stacey. She just said that the film has been held over another week at the Lamley Sunset 5 here in Los Angeles in Hollywood at Laurel and Sunset. So if it's not this week, if you can't for whatever reason, it'll be there next week as well. How did you and the director and producer hook up for this? And what was the understanding of what you were trying to create?
Joao was doing commercials and animation in New York. Made the mistake, perhaps, or I'm just kidding. But anyway, he read my book, 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, and it really, kind of impacted him to examine, you know, how he was living and kind of how much he'd strayed from his original values. And so then he approached me about doing a project together. And, the film was definitely a collaboration. I mean, it kind of extends out from the book I wrote, 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl, but more into this area of practical solutions and you know, things that people can do in their lives now. By the way, I also have a new book coming out this month called Notes from the Edge Times,
right,
which also kind of leads people through the evolution of my ideas from the last book and also thinking about how to apply the more philosophical ideas in more practical and tangible ways.
You're actually going to be doing a book signing tour on that, right?
That's correct. Yeah, I'll be back in L.A., I think, November 4th at Barnes & Noble's, maybe in Santa Monica.
Okay, so maybe if you or Stacey or whomever lets us know, we can put that up on our Facebook and website and have people come out and meet you there. Tell us a little bit more. Edge Times, what are we talking about?
Well, I mean, that's really, it's the same thing that we really discussed in the movie. I mean, this is a very critical time. I mean, we are seeing, you know, accelerating climate change. So the glaciers around the planet are melting, which could really lead to, you know, hundreds of millions of people sort of lacking access to fresh water, you know, if they go from the Himalayas and stuff like that. We're seeing the species extinction crisis accelerate, that 25% of all mammalian species, maybe all species in general, could be extinct in 30 years. The oceans are 90% fished out of large fish, and ecosystems and marine life are collapsing. So we actually are really on the precipice where, you know, because we don't really know how much of the web of life we can remove before it no longer sustains, you know, mammals such as ourselves. And before that happens, you know, we really should reassess what we're doing on the planet, what the intention of our civilization is, and move in a different direction.
You know, I had the opportunity to interview Bruce Lipton actually this weekend, and it's interesting. At the end, he said, I don't know if we're going to make it, but if we are, we have to do something or do a lot more now and really speed this up. So I kind of liked his honesty. I didn't like his answer because he's a scientist and he's looking at data that we don't have access to. What is your take on that?
Same perspective. I mean, I think that's why it's the edge, you know. It really is the edge, and it's very complicated because for a lot of people, you know, I'm in Venice at the moment. I mean, it's so cushy here. You know, the wealthy people are still kind of, you know, living better lives than humans have ever lived, you know, and the poor people are often invisible to them, and the destruction and the eradication of natural diversity is invisible unless you go out looking for it. So, you know, and we've created a, you know, mass media structure which basically, you know, programs the human mind in a frequency of kind of distraction and narcissism. So we have really powerful forces working against the change that happens, that has to take place.
So how do we awaken to that? If this is the cocoon that we live in, and for some it's cushy and for some it's comfortable, they have to be jarred out of it or understand what is being presented. And obviously a movie like this, 2012, Time for Change, can help. But do you believe that there is something that we could personally do to help us get to a new level of understanding here?
Yes. I mean, and that's the stuff that I've, you know, discussed in the film and in my book, and then also, you know, what we're actually trying to put into practice through the Evolve for Social movement. You know, people need to come together and begin to discuss these real facts and you know, trends that are going to lead to, you know, sort of very negative outcomes unless they become very proactive. And, you know, frankly, I mean, I don't know how much change is going to come until there is, you know, more catastrophe. I mean, we've seen the Gulf oil spill. You know, now apparently, you know, there's a lot of illness happening throughout the whole region that isn't even getting covered or reported in the mainstream media, which just says, oh, the oil is all gone. You know, well, that's because these dispersants report in that are known to be extremely carcinogenic, so now people are starting to get sick down there. So, you know, and that's not even leading to much in the way of outrage or civil society organizing. So, you know, nobody can really say at this point, you know, what it's going to take. You know, and you know, I can't be inauthentically positive for you. I mean, I think, you know, I'm still very hopeful. I also believe there's a whole psychic element to transformation. I think that, you know, a lot of people are discovering that humans do possess psychic and paranormal capacities, extrasensory capacities, and I believe that those are going to be part of what are going to awaken as we shift from, you know, what the Hopi talk about as the fourth world into this fifth world. It's almost like we'll develop new perceptual modalities that will bring us into a different way of being.
I sure hope so. And I like that option as well. And I have a feeling that there's a lot more, not only hopefulness there, but scientific proof that that can be indeed the case. I actually got an opportunity to interview Dr. William Tiller this weekend as well. And he was telling me exactly that, that the science shows, and not all scientists are subscribing to this yet, but the science is showing that there is something else going on than meets the eye, and it's not, can't be explained by Newtonian physics or the kind of physics that we are used to and that science is used to and has been for the past 400 years. And so he says, when we get into that level, and we won't go into it now, but he says, when we get into that level, anything can happen. And I said, anything? And he says, Filippo, anything. And I said, give me an example. He says, you can manipulate matter. And I'm like, okay, that's pretty much anything. Because if you can manipulate matter, you can manipulate the world as we know it.
Yeah, but I mean, right. But it seems like, you know, in a way we have to go through this process of kind of, you know, recognizing the, you know, mistakes that we've made as a species to get to this point, and maybe some sort of painful correctives before we're able to kind of bloom forth in some type of new era of psychic expansion.
You know, it's interesting, Daniel, as you're sharing that with me, I'm thinking of a few friends in particular where I've seen the path that they're in, and I say, well, you know, this could lead to this. As a matter of fact, it probably will. As a matter of fact, it will kill you if you keep doing this.
Right.
Right. And so then, you know, then you go and visit them at the hospital after they've done this, and you can't say I told you so, because it's not being much of a friend. Right. But you want to say you can learn from joy. You can learn when I was trying to tell you, why did you have to go through it? And is that where we're headed? Like, we might have to go through it, or
Well, I mean, I think it seems quite possible.
Yeah. Well, when we come back in just a moment here, I want to ask you about some experiences that you have had that have gotten you to see things in a different way that I know that you like to share. So I'm looking forward to having that conversation, and I think you know what that's about. So I want to remind everybody that we're speaking to author, journalist, filmmaker, and protagonist of the new film 2012 Time for Change, Daniel Pinchbeck. The film is being screened right now in Los Angeles at the Lamley Sunset 5, and Life Changes will be hosting a screening on Wednesday the 13th, this week, October Wednesday the 13th. And Daniel has several books out, but he's got one coming out that's called Notes from the Edge Times. And so that's something to look for. And if you stay on top of our website at lifechanges.ws, we'll try and fill you in with as much information on Daniel and all our guests. Want to remind you also that you can listen to this show in its archived complete form at lifechanges.ws, and you can also learn more about Daniel there. You can reach us by going to Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, actually, and we're getting out there. We're putting this information out there. We appreciate the emails and the calls and the Twitter messages and all of that, and Facebook messages, because we're knowing that you're hearing it. You're appreciating it as well, and you're doing something with the information that you're learning. We also love the fact that so many of you have written us and told us who you think we should have on as a guest. You're sharing the information that you want to know more about, and we're happy to bring those people on as we can. So with that, I want to bring back Daniel Pinchbeck to the show and his dog.
Yeah, let's go. I'm just going to warn you that in like 10 minutes-ish, I'm going to have to leave because I'm in Venice and I have to make it to the theater by the time the show lets out.
Oh, absolutely. That's exactly the time that we have allotted. So perfect.
Great.
I know you have a screening tonight. The dog's name is what?
Actually, it's not my dog. I'm at a friend's house in Venice. I'm a little allergic to dogs, actually. So.
Okay. Well, the dog wanted to be heard on radio. Okay. Exactly. So you have had some experiences that take you almost literally out of your mind that you even have written about and talk a little bit about in the film. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I wouldn't say they took me out of my mind. I would say they took me into my psyche.
Okay.
But yes, and I've done a lot of work with shamanic plants, especially ayahuasca, which is a medicine sacred plant. Compounds from the Amazon basin that's used by tribes from Brazil through Ecuador, Colombia, Peru. It's two plants brewed together that create a visionary psychoactive effect. I've worked with mushrooms. I went to West Africa. I worked with Iboga, which is known in the West as Ibogaine, Ibogaine, where it's gaining a lot of interest as a treatment tool for heroin and cocaine addiction.
What happens from an American perspective? I mean, I personally have seen people go through it that are Hispanic or Mexican and all that, and have them describe it. But here, from the basis of how we've been raised and how we've thought about these things, what happens, and what's your perspective on it?
I had to write a whole book.
Right.
Well, I mean, I personally, I think that, the idea that humans are the only kind of entity that possess consciousness is not, to me, seems like a wrong idea. And I believe that the plant world, which is kind of an elder species intelligence, can communicate with us. And it's kind of almost like designated these certain plants to be teachers to humanity as we go through our kind of adolescent initiatory hazing process. So I think that plants like the peyote cactus and the psilocybin mushroom species and the ayahuasca compound, they're actually kind of emissaries from this elder species wisdom of the plant world who are showing ourselves to ourselves. And then they give us visions of these other astral plane realities and, just point out to us our faults and kind of give us the opportunity to grow.
So this isn't necessarily, for those who might argue, he likes to take drugs or this is, he's a pothead or whatever. This isn't necessarily fun, is it?
No, I mean, it can be extremely beautiful and amazing and fun, but you can also have work, I worked with one tradition called Santo Daime from Brazil, which is a religion that uses ayahuasca as its medicine. And they do all-night ceremonies where everybody wears white and sings these hymns together. Sometimes you dance a little two-step in a tiny little box for 8 or 10 hours, and they call those ceremonies works. So it actually is, requires a lot of stamina, and you have to be willing to kind of work with the whole community.
And where do you personally think that these experiences are coming from having done them? Do you think that they're coming from your pineal gland and they're already in you, or that you're connecting to something outside of yourself?
Maybe that's a false dualism. According to quantum theory or string theory or, Vedantic Hindu philosophy, you go into the, deepest molecular quantum flimmering levels, and there's a whole other cosmos there, maybe consciousness is kind of a universal phenomenon, and these substances help you kind of beam into different aspects of this larger field of consciousness.
Okay, so have you been shown things? Obviously, you share in your books and in the movie so much. What would you like to share with the audience here that could pique their interest in the movie and the books of what you've been shown, what you've experienced, what you've seen?
In the film we really talk about my work with my initiation with Iboga, which was an African root bark that gives you a very long journey and a very psychoanalytical kind of journey where you see a lot of your early childhood and ancestors sometimes and so on. And you get all sorts of messages from that. We also have Sting talking about his first experience with ayahuasca, which we animate, and him talking about how that was really the first genuinely religious experience that he'd ever had, where he felt the sense of connectivity to the cosmos on a cellular level. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really amazing stuff around these experiences. But also, I mean, I'm not really an advocate. I have been called that in the media, but of the psychedelic experience, I mean, I think it's a personal choice. And obviously, our society still frowns on these experiences. But I think, at the same time, our society condones, use of a lot of different, compounds that haven't been around very long, these new psychoactive agents that pharmaceutical companies make for profit, whereas these substances have a long, safe history of human use and are sacred to, different cultures around the world.
Right. Right. Interesting. You know, it's interesting that had I had this conversation with you before, I might have asked Dr. William Tiller what he thought about this, because he, too, is advocating that looking within. He talks about meditation and all that. And this is coming from a scientist who's been practicing science in industry and in laboratories for over 50 years. He's an 80-year-old something man. And bless you. Really well respected in the industry, and now considered a heretic by many because of these exact things that he's sharing. So, how are you sometimes, you said like the media says that you're an advocate of it, and I could see where they could get that and that they build their hype the way they do. But, it seems to me that it doesn't matter to you what people are saying. You feel like you have a mission and you just got to do what you got to do, right?
I feel like, and I guess that's something that I also gained from, you mentioned my heritage. My mother was part of the Beat Generation, and, those guys took a big hammering in the mainstream media. They were kind of proposing that, our society had become very conscripted, and there was, that people had lost contact with their essence, and, there was this deeper potential for liberation, and that really led to a lot of what happened in the 60s. But I think if you're somebody who is, bringing up new information that the culture wants to resist or feels a little threatened by, you're going to get hammered a little bit, and it's almost a good sign. It's almost like the cult, you've awoken the antibodies of the cultural mainstream. So, I try not to take it personally.
Excellent. And I also noticed, at least during our conversation and what I've read about you, that there isn't a lot of down with this and those evil those people. It's we've got to change and this is what we've got to do about it. Am I getting that right from you?
Yeah. I mean, I think that whole aggressive negativity of a lot of left-wing political activism hasn't really served us very well. And, I think we really don't have time for that anymore. Really, we have to figure out what are the, connection points. So, my Evolver is actually a LLC. It's a corporation. And that was very intentional because I feel like corporations, have been very destructive, but they're also very powerful agents of transformation. So if you look at alchemy, it talks about turning poisons into medicines. So the question is, how can we take some of the poisons that of the capitalist and corporate system, which have been so effective for changing, the world, but then employ them, for the good and for the elevation and betterment of people.
Daniel, excellent. Give everybody the website for Evolver, please.
Absolutely. Well, I have a web magazine, realitysandwich.com. Then Evolver is evolver.net. And then obviously the film website, which was hacked last week, so it's actually not working very well right now, is 2012timeforchange.com.
That's interesting about the hacking of that. I'm sorry to hear that, but things have happened like that, and we still persevere. So I know you've got to go to a screening, actually, but is there any last things that you'd like to share other than encouraging people to come see the film?
I think we got across some ideas there. I mean, I just encourage them to check out the work and check out the film and the books. And thank you very much for this opportunity to chat.
Daniel, thank you. Keep doing what you're doing and look forward to meeting with you and having your screening on Wednesday with or without you.
Awesome. Have a great night. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. Wow. There's so much going on and so many people that are doing it from different perspectives. And I find that absolutely fascinating. From yesterday getting to interview in person and on camera, Dr. William Tiller, who is very scientific and one would think a certain way because he's of an older generation. He's over 80 years old. At least I think he is. I hope I'm not saying something that he's not. Somebody told me he was over 80. Maybe he's only 60. Who knows? I should find out before I say that. I hope he's not listening today. But what was I going to say? Oh, he might not be 80. But anyway, he's of another generation, and he's approaching the problems, or he's approaching the solutions, I should say, from a perspective. And here we have Daniel, who's approaching it from another perspective. And we have talked about and have had young people on, 23-year-olds and 28-year-olds, 25-year-olds, who are approaching it from their perspective. It's actually a beautiful thing. And we're coming at the solutions from all sides. And we're all a part of this. The funny thing is, and the wonderful thing is that there are no leaders, and everybody is a leader. It's almost as if we are all pieces of the puzzle, and when we figure out what our piece is, we have to stand up and lead, or we have to stand up and be who we are. And whether you look at this as a movement, or whether you look at this as an evolution or a revolution, or you just look at it as personal growth, for some of us, 2012 or evolution or whatever or shift, maybe that doesn't matter. But what does matter is that you're starting to feel it's not okay to do this and that, or it's no longer okay for me to just waste things like that, or it's no longer okay for me to own that many cars, or throw something away that's good, or to have people fighting for oil, or you know, whatever may or may not be, depending on what you believe. What I'm getting at is that, you know, are people starving when other people are throwing away food, and you know, there but for the grace of God go I, because I could have been born in that country, kind of thing, and in that culture, or in that part of the United States. So if you're feeling something, if you're sensing something, if you're just awakening to something, then that's right for you. That's saying something to you. And you don't have to do anything in particular. Maybe you just have to be you. And maybe you is the perfect thing. In fact, I know it is, because that's the way it's supposed to work. And speaking of the way things are supposed to work, we've got Dorothy Lee Donahue here, who is going to present the next segment, which is Change Your Life. Dorothy?
Hi. It's Change Yourself, Change Your World.
Oh, that's good, too. And here it is, Dorothy Lee Donahue.
Hi. Each week, I ask you to remember that you are the power in your world. And I get calls or emails every now and then asking me what I mean by this. The answer is really quite simple. We're programmed from the time we are born to believe that we're helpless and are to give our power away. This is pretty much true for a little while, because as babies, our parents are the power in our world. And without them to take care of us, to feed us, to change our diapers, to clothe us, and to protect us from the elements, we wouldn't survive. They also teach us how to talk and how to get along with others, or not, depends on our parents. And they also prepare us for school and society. For many of us, our parents are our gods. They're so big. Think about it. We look up to them. We really do. And we should. And because they are our very first authority figures, and because we've been programmed to believe that if we don't do what they want us to do, then we're bad and wrong. So some of us choose to believe this for the rest of our lives, and thus we give our power to them forever until we remember or we're reminded that we are the power in our world. So then this vicious cycle can go on and on. We're sent to school and our teachers become other authority figures, and we must do exactly as they say and be very careful to not think outside of the box. If we don't do exactly what they say, then we run the risk of being diagnosed and labeled and maybe told that we have ADHD, and then they fill us full of Ritalin. And then as we grow up, the government becomes the ultimate authority figure. And all you have to do is open up a newspaper or turn on the TV and you can see where this has gotten the world. But tonight I want to talk about another authority figure, and that is the medical industry and doctors, and how we must begin taking our power back. Now, I'm an authority on this. In 1993, I had an accident that led me into a workers' compensation situation. And not only did I lose my mind during this period, I nearly lost my life three times during my 13-year ordeal within this system. I underwent 8 surgeries and ended up in a wheelchair in excruciating pain. By 1999, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia. I had 4 collapsed discs in my spine, and I was told that my knees were so riddled with arthritis that artificial knees were not an option. I was also told that my spine was also riddled with arthritis that was beyond help, and that my entire skeletal structure was beyond hope, and that there was nothing that could be done for me. Well, from my point of view, it hurts too much to walk more than a few feet at a time. It took a long time to do that too. It hurt to lie down. It hurt to sit. It hurt to stand. It hurt to move. I had torn the rotator cuff in my left shoulder, so it was difficult to move the left side, my left arm. I couldn't sleep without lots of medication, and I was on muscle relaxants, antidepressants, pain medications, and more. I hated my life. I mentioned earlier that I almost lost my life 3 times during this ordeal, but that isn't exactly the truth. The truth is that I died 3 times. The medications didn't work as fast as I wanted them to, and the warnings on the bottle said, may cause drowsiness. Alcohol intensifies effects. So in an attempt to go to sleep, because when I slept, I couldn't feel the pain as much. So in March of 2001, I washed the pills down with a little wine. And I died and I went home to the light, just as we all do when it's our time to return home to our Mother, Father, God, and choose our next incarnation. And by the way, for those of you who may not remember, there is no heaven or hell except for the ones we co-create for ourselves right here on Earth. When you die, there is only the light. I'm an expert on this because I have died 7 times, and this is where I've gone each time. If hell existed, I promise you that I have made more than enough less than elegant choices this lifetime to qualify for entrance, so I would have gone there if there were one. Anyway, back to the light. They sent me back here to heal myself. Now, this kind of pissed me off because the man who sent me back was known to the world as the Christ. And here he was, the man himself, and he said, go back and heal yourself and share your story with the world as to how you did it. And I said, I know I've been bad, but no one deserves to feel this much pain. He then told me that the pain and suffering I was experiencing was the love I was withholding. Now, this really made me angry because he and I had had several conversations before this one, and he had always told me what a wonderful big heart I had and how much love I had shared with others and how many loving miracles I had co-created from my big loving heart. And now he was saying, what was going on here? And he said, you're not loving you. You're much too intelligent to be making the choices you are making. Go back and listen to what you are telling your clients. Get well. Get to work. Connect and listen to your higher self. And do what you have come here to do. And then the next thing I knew, I was back in my body and puking up my guts and feeling like I was dying, but knowing that this was just the beginning of a truly bad hangover. So what does this have to do with being the power in our world? Simple, really. I've given all of my power to the doctors and the pharmacies, and I've forgotten the power within me. I had forgotten that my tomorrow is what I believe, feel, think, say, and do today. I had also forgotten that my body believes every word I say, and I'd also forgotten the power of the mind to heal. I had forgotten that all disease begins in the emotional and mental bodies first, and that our physical bodies are crying out for water and alkalinity and proper nutrition. I had also refused to remember and acknowledge that the extra 60 pounds I was carrying had anything to do with the pain in my knees. The doctors had never once mentioned that losing weight might take some of the make some of the pain go away. Not once. So why should I bother thinking, and why bother remembering all of the things I just mentioned? These are the things I've been teaching for years. These are the methods that I have used in the past to heal minor things in myself and to assist others in healing. So what went wrong? I had given all of my power away. Once I agreed to the first unnecessary surgery, I was the one not taking the responsibility for my physical condition. It wasn't until after the last knee surgery that a holistic orthopedic surgeon told me that they should never have operated in the first place because these kinds of surgeries just exacerbate an arthritic condition. However, once I began to remember what I know, I had no choice but to get better and better and better. The mind is so powerful that when we choose to use it correctly, we can easily co-create miracles for ourselves. Combine that with choosing to love ourselves, and wow, world, watch out. In just 6 months, I was out of the wheelchair and on a plane to South Africa, and I climbed a mountain. My friend said it was a hill, but to me, it was a mountain. I still used the walker if I went to some place like SeaWorld, and I used a walking stick to go up and down my stairs. But for the most part, I used my mind, and I told myself every day that I felt great, and I still tell myself this. However, 9 years later, the arthritis is still in my back, my knees, my hands, and in my feet. And just a few months ago, my good friend the Christ suggested that I get x-rays and see a doctor for a diagnosis. And I didn't understand this, and I didn't want to do it because I know what my bones look like. I couldn't understand why he wanted me to do this. However, I did it anyway because when he wants something, he wants it. And he doesn't give up. So I just went to see the doctor last week. And she told me the very same thing they told me in 1999. And as she was telling me this, I was lying down on her examination table, and I was glad that I was doing it because she said basically that my structural body was shot to shit, and there was absolutely nothing that the medical industry could do for me except to prescribe more medicines with more horrible side effects. And for about 1.5 minutes, I allowed my body to believe what she said. And it was awful. I felt all of that pain. And I'm so glad I was lying down, because if I'd been sitting up, I would have collapsed. However, the good news is that I remembered that I am the power in my world. And I told my body that I feel great. And I sat up and I thanked her. And I walked out of there with my head up straight, feeling great. And I've resolved to take the next step in my healing. I'm ready to do it right this time. And I'm asking for the holistic doctors with the right programs for me to come forward and let us work together to heal me completely from the inside out, because my guides tell me that this is part of my mission and purpose. And they tell me that I can make it all completely disappear from the inside out, and then I can share with you how I did this so that you can do it to heal yourself if you need to. This is just one of the reasons that they kick me out of the light each time I prematurely returned home. So thank you for listening, and until next week, please remember that you are the power in your world. You are the guru you've been waiting and looking for, and you're the only one who can end your suffering, and you can only do this by beginning a love affair with you. Let us choose to become very conscious co-creators by making the most elegant choices possible, and let us never forget that we are powerful beyond measure, and that we are love, we are lovable, and we are love.
Well, well, well. Thank you, Dorothy Lee Donahue, with Change Yourself, Change the World. And with that, we've come to a conclusion of another Life Changes with Filippo, and I am so grateful to our guest, Daniel Pinchbeck, for having been on the show, and look forward to our next week's guest, Susan Leahy, who is a sought-after speaker and presenter that has been speaking professionally at corporations, nonprofit organizations, and universities for over a decade. And as a communications specialist, Susan's work revolves around turning groups into teams through running better meetings, increasing communication to drive results. So talk about life changes in the business. With that, I want to thank you all for listening, and also want to thank our sponsors, Ion Ways, Water Systems, and Dorothy Lee Donahue, and Love and Miracles. And to learn more about them, you can go to our website at lifechanges.ws and go to our sponsor page. Want to say that I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it's been a pleasure hosting Life Changes with Filippo today. I, along with our producers, Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark M. Lejeur, and our engineer, Seth Hendricks, thank you for being part of this show and for being part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, life changes.